Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com. Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. Medicine, nutrition, health-related questions are in our wheelhouse. And So, how are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good, thanks. So what's our first question for the segment?
We've got a question from Elaine. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I did an at-home blood spot food allergy test kit, and I scored severe for milk and negative for all other foods. What is your opinion of the accuracy of these types of home test kits?
Okay, this is a good question, and this is actually a question that we recently took up in a conversation that I had with Dr. Russell Jaffe, who is he's like the premier guy in the integrative field on the subject of testing. And he, in fact, is the originator of a very well-known allergy test called the ELISA ACT test. It's a test that unfortunately...
I saw him lecture last winter at the Integrative Health Conference. It was wonderful.
Right. So he's a very authoritative guy, very brilliant. He's trained as a pathologist, which means he's actually, a lot of people think pathologists just dissect dead bodies, but actually pathologists are trained in laboratory science, and pathologists are often the doctors who do, analysis of test results. And so he's quite well versed in all these technologies. And, first off, I'll say that allergy testing is unreliable. It's unreliable. Mm. It is useful for giving us a clue, the blood tests, as to what you might be sensitive to. But, as you know, Layla, that's just the beginning of your investigation. When you come in, a patient brings in an allergy test that either we do or somebody else did, is you'll do a more comprehensive investigation, having them attempt an elimination diet, maybe re-challenge themselves with certain foods to see if it really makes a difference.
An elimination provocation protocol, absolutely,
And you actually recently did an article about the difference between allergy and intolerance, which is two different things, because allergy is easier to pick up with either skin testing or blood testing, but some patients may have an intolerance that you cannot detect with any kind of allergy test.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
The most basic kind of intolerance, meaning you lack the thing that you need to digest that particular food. I think the best example might be, for instance, lactose intolerance, where we lack the lactase enzyme to digest milk. But it could be all kinds of other intolerances to various foods, whether that food has been so processed that the food itself lacks the enzymes for you to tolerate it, for you to be able to digest it. So that plays a huge role in what we're intolerant to. And it's such a spectrum of different foods, and it's such a spectrum of different symptoms that people are presenting with. It's very interesting.
So coming back to this send-away test where you, I guess you put a drop on a piece of blotter paper and you send it in, I actually think that that's the least likely kind of allergy test to give us meaningful results, because we the test that go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh. One of the reasons because it's a blood spot. From my readings, from my research, I often read that it's just simply not enough blood to be as accurate as taking a blood as a blood test that we would do here in the office.
Right, and the test that we do, I mean, we carefully refrigerate the blood. We don't let it sit for too long, because if it sits for too long, it actually loses its viability and its ability to give you a meaningful result. It runs through very fancy schmancy equipment. And I think that, and I'll admit, even to the limitations of those tests, because sometimes they'll tell us that somebody's sensitive to something, and it may just be that the person eats that food all the time, and that creates an immune signature on the blood
That's
test.
True.
Alternatively, you know, you might miss something, and it might a person might say, "Yeah, but I swear, every time I eat shrimp, I get a problem." Or tomatoes, and that doesn't show up on the test. And it's like, okay, well, I'll go with your impression. I'll go with the patient's impression foremost. These allergy tests are also sometimes helpful because some people are become food phobic. They know they have what seem to be reactions, and they're not doing well. And as they continue to not do well, they suspect that every food under the sun is causing a problem. So sometimes we could do a reality test and say, hey, you know, it doesn't look like you're sensitive to this, that, and the other thing. Let's reintroduce those foods. And it gives patients some guidance as to what they can put back in. Because, the Lord taketh and the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. You know, we're a little bit like that sometimes with diets. And we find some patients who are on overly restricted diets. And we actually would like to put them on more inclusive diets. And sometimes if we can verify the safety of a food with an allergy test, that gives us an opportunity to create a more balanced diet for a patient who's food phobic. So, so bottom line, I got to say, I'm not a big fan of those tests.
Yeah, I would agree. And I also don't like that you're left to your own devices in interpreting this blood test result without the aid of a healthcare practitioner.
Right.
Somebody who's qualified to interpret this for you and how to use it meaningfully, how to interpret it.
Right. Yeah. You know, let's say the blood test says, you shouldn't have wheat, you shouldn't have dairy, and you shouldn't have soy, and you shouldn't have tomatoes, and you shouldn't have peanuts, and you should have almonds. So you walk around with this little card that you got from a company that you mailed away from for the rest of your life, and those are foods that you're going to avoid. And, you know, maybe, just maybe, it's creating undue hardship and maybe even might compromise your nutrition based on an erroneous test.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And especially if somebody who's very finicky gets a result like that of being, quote, allergic to five different foods, that could really limit them nutritionally and set them up for other problems down the road. So,
yep.
Elaine, your best bet is to seek help from a qualified practitioner to guide you through all of that if you suspect any kind of food allergy, intolerance, sensitivity, and to deal with your symptoms.
It sounds self-serving.
That's what we do every day.
It sounds self-serving, but, you know, I think really it's there's no shortcut on this, unfortunately.
That's true.
Yep.
There's no shortcut, yeah. Anyway, Elaine, best of luck. Okay. We've got a great question from Gary, and he's very, very funny the way he writes this. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I wouldn't call it gut-wrenching, but the world of probiotics seems to be in a state of ferment.
Wow. Okay.
Anyway, humor aside, Dr. O'Hara's has seemed to be the gold standard for a good number of years, but there has been a proliferation of so many other formulas. Your friend and colleague, Stephen Sinatra, is talking about a different probiotic which only contains a single strain, yet on the other side, Dr. David Perlmutter, another colleague of yours, is recommending five core species of probiotics, and Life Extension is yet talking about all other kinds of probiotics. So, is more better? How do we do this? It's pretty murky.
Right.
How do we make sense of all this information about probiotics?
It is rather bewildering, both for scientists and consumers. We're really at the dawning of our understanding of how probiotics work, and there are different schools of thought. You know, among the controversies are, should you use a single species, very targeted approach, or should you use a multiplicity of species that may work synergistically? You know, we know the gut contains literally thousands of different species of bacteria, and to just provide one may be inadequate. On the other hand, if you put a lot of different ingredients together in a capsule, you know, Dr. Hira's is 12 different things, it increases the likelihood there may be an intolerance. Some people are intolerant to one or another of the probiotics that are in a mixed blend. And, you know, I got to say that there's no single probiotic that's ideal for everyone. It's different strokes for different folks, and it probably has to do with genetics, but it also has to do with your existing microbiome. And actually, our microbiomes are very individual. They're like our fingerprints. And, you know, you will actually, in the future, you know, one method of forensic science will be, you know, instead of analyzing blood samples or, you know, DNA, it will be maybe to, you know, measure our microbiome because it's as distinct to every individual as a fingerprint. So, and then there's the theory of, well, should it be something that always has to be refrigerated, or it can be something that is stable at room temperature? Doctor, here is a stable at room temperature. Others require and actually pride themselves on the fact that they're refrigerated. Should it be in a, what's the matrix? Should it be dairy free, or should it, you know, can it, is dairy the best thing because dairy helps to sustain the growth of lactobacillus? Should it be enteric coated? Because enteric coating means that it won't be neutralized by stomach acid, or does that matter? That's, you know, another controversy. Should it be taken with food, without food, you know, and so on.
Just as an aside about the controversy about enteric coated, not enteric coated, and we get this question a lot, when is the best time to take it, on an empty stomach or on a full stomach? Well, apparently, there are two groups of scientists. Group A says, take it on an empty stomach because that's when you have the least amount of stomach acid to destroy the probiotic. However, Group B scientists say, no, take it with food because the food in your stomach will absorb all that acid so it doesn't cleave into the probiotic. So.
Right. Yeah. So we just enumerated the controversies. We don't know all the answers. Among you know, and we actually provide our patients with a variety of probiotics. We have something for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's patients called SCD probiotics. I think it's made by Claire. We have we don't use Dr. Harris for our patients with inflammatory bowel disease. But we use them generally for a lot of patients. They're just a good general purpose probiotic. We use Culturelle, which is one species for people who might be very sensitive. We try one thing at a time, so Culturelle fits the bill for that, and it has a good reputation. That's Lactobacillus GG, which is a popular probiotic. Then there are soil-based organisms. Some people really like soil-based organisms. I'm a little bit concerned about the potential for potentially harmful probiotics in a soil-based organism, although a lot of people think that that's okay.
Pick that apple off the tree and don't wash it and eat it. Kind of deal.
You know, or
pick the cucumber out of the patch and.
Or what you tell people, you know,
kind of wipe it on your shirt and.
Yeah, one of the tricks I learned from you is I have kimchi in the refrigerator all the time, and I have like a little bit of kimchi as a side dish. You know, you can't eat like a big, you know, heaping platter of kimchi. You just need like it's just like a little condiment, you know, that you have, and it's live organisms. I'll have some live, not pasteurized sauerkraut. The trick is that you have to get the non-pasteurized kind, which you have to get usually from a health food store.
Pasteurization will kill the probiotics,
So I think that's a good way to go, too. And that's, I think, one of the less well-known things. Or some people tolerate dairy, you know, a good live culture yogurt. What kind of, what popular brand of yogurt do you like? Or do you like people to make their own yogurt?
Either if they're not making their own yogurt, like a lot of our ulcerative colitis or Crohn's patients will make, I think I like Stonyfield Organic or anything that's at least organic.
And full
fat.
Because
I don't want anyone having the hormones and pesticide residues and all of those things. So.
And full fat, right?
And full fat, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You want full fat because the more skim you go in your yogurt, the more carbohydrate. And that's you don't necessarily want that.
And less satiety.
Right, and dairy fat, for those who can tolerate it, offer beneficial fats. And, yes, it offers satiety.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Absolutely.
All right, so, you know.
Gary, thanks for the great question.
Great question, and, you know, write us back in about 10 years, we'll have all the answers. Or maybe not. No, but just let me say that the future promises, I think, more functional probiotics. In other words, there may be we may discover that certain probiotics are really great for women who get a lot of urinary tract infections, or certain probiotics will be great for certain patients who have irritable bowel syndrome. Certain may be helpful for constipation. Certain may be helpful for diarrhea. Certain may be helpful for overall immunity. You know, what we like these days, and we've done whole programs on this, is something called RegActive, which is a type of probiotic that's unique in that it makes glutathione in your gut. Mm-hmm. And this is another way to boost your glutathione. We were talking about glutathione in part one. You can take oral glutathione. That's somewhat absorbed. You can take it intravenously. You can take precursors like NAC, or you can take probiotics that make glutathione. And the RegActive comes in three different types. It comes in immune, it comes in a liver support detox, and it comes in a cardio formula. And, mm-hmm. you know, that I think is one of the most intriguing new concepts in probiotics. I'm very excited about that. It's made by the same company that makes Dr. Ahira's. And, you know, I'm really glad that they're widening their offerings, because Dr. Ahira's great for a lot of people. But I see they're really expanding their firepower by offering people some different alternatives there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've got a question from Sharon. Hi, love your show. Thanks for all your great advice. I have rheumatoid arthritis and the early signs of ulcerative colitis, for which I'm taking Enbrel on a weekly basis. It's taking care of everything pretty well. I also follow a gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free diet. I'm wondering, is it also okay if I take some systemic enzymes, some curcumin,
some boswellian? That would be great. All those would be great. You know, fish oil, certainly. You know, Enbrel is an artificial immune suppressant, and it's a big gun medication for rheumatoid arthritis. But you might get some hamburger helper kinds of effects from taking these additional nutrients and being on a better diet. You know, Enbrel doesn't always work. You will increase your chances of having a good response to Enbrel and maybe hasten your ability to get off Enbrel once you've achieved remission. So I would recommend all the other things in addition to it. You know, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to this one yet, but Layla, we did an outstanding podcast recently with James Scafidi, who's the CEO of Zycal, who are the makers of Ostanol. Now, this is a supplement we've been using a lot for osteoporosis and a little bit for osteoarthritis. But I have to say, I was really impressed with the data that shows it has general anti-inflammatory properties. And I'm going to begin to use you have to listen to that podcast. I don't know if you got a chance this week. But please listen. You know, just if you have a break between patients, just put on your headphones and listen to that podcast, because it's just really quite interesting. And he's the research is really good. And that company, God bless them, they're really committed to investing their dollars in, you know, not just more advertisement, but in doing the research that actually supports the efficacy of that product. It's bone morphogenic protein, which you would think, well, that's great if you have a fracture. We've seen good results in healing fractures. We've seen good results in osteoporosis. But also it has pervasive benefits on collagen. And, you know, collagen repair is really important in osteoarthritis and in rheumatoid arthritis. And I'm going to start using more Ostanol in our patients who have these kinds of problems. Wow. And I suggest that consumers who have osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis consider taking Ostanol. It's Ostinol, and we've done a podcast on it. So listen to the podcast and look at the research. And if you find it plausible, add that to your regimen.
Yeah. Sharon, best of luck to you. Okay.
Do you have to, like, one kind of small question? Is there such a thing?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Small question. Dr. Hoffman, I haven't heard you talk about apple cider vinegar. I've seen many benefits for it.
Right.
Is it just hype, or does it have any good uses? This is from Tom.
Yeah.
Tom, I just actually, if you subscribe to our newsletter, I just wrote a brief article about it. So I could just give you a quick rundown. Apple cider vinegar can be very beneficial for health. It's got beneficial polyphenols like chlorogenic acid, which can inhibit the oxidation of LDL cholesterol. That's actually one of the most important things in looking at your lipid profile, is the amount of oxidized cholesterol. And the fermentation process leaves it rich with other antioxidants, epicatechin, catechin, caffeic acid, gallic acid. So
isn't chlorogenic acid a component of coffee? Is it not?
Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Okay.
As well,
because I really don't think of, you know, apple cider vinegar and coffee as having anything in common. But that's
right,
interesting. Yeah.
Right. But there it is. And apparently there are a lot of good vinegars out there. And the thing to do with apple cider vinegar is don't buy a distilled apple cider vinegar. You want to look for murkiness, cloudiness, opacity in your apple cider vinegar, because that's the mother, and that's got the acetic acid bacteria, which can help with your own microbiota in your gut.
When you say the mother,
apple
in other
cider,
words,
it's
like a culture, a live culture, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, another, I almost want to call it another type of probiotic, yeah.
Okay, cool. And there's also some appetite implications of apple cider vinegar. Some people take a little bit before a meal, and it has an appetite-suppressing effect. And maybe that's in line with the fact that, you know, green coffee bean is touted as an appetite suppressant as well. You know, chlorogenic acid. Who knows?
Maybe that's it.
You know, caffeic acid's in there. That's a different thing. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then there's also some...
apple cider vinegar is also very alkalinizing in the body. Even though it's acidic, it's alkalinizing.
Mm-hmm.
And having a good acid-alkaline balance can be good for us. And for those people trying to lose weight, it can increase satiety. Those who are using apple cider vinegar, even in their salad, researchers have found that they will actually eat less calories.
Because
that vinegar has a satiating effect.
I always use before dinner, I always have a big old salad with whatever's handy, lettuce, and then I sometimes put in artichoke hearts, which I like, and beets, and crumble some walnuts on top, and maybe some sliced red onions, and whatever's hanging around there in the refrigerator. But I always use balsamic vinegar. Am I losing out? Is there any?
No. Balsamic vinegar is actually a nice idea too. I don't think it will have the satiating effects as apple cider vinegar may.
Okay.
But everybody's different.
Yeah. Well, I find it. It's sort of like the opposite of the principle of life is short, eat dessert first. One of the ways that, I can prevent myself from putting the feed bag on too much is to have a big salad as a prelude to my protein meal.
Yeah.
So that, I'm half full by the time I attack the protein portion, and then I'm less likely to, gravitate to a big dessert. So a couple of squares of dark chocolate will do, and maybe, handful of, almonds.
Right.
So, okay.
Oh. And one last tidbit about apple cider vinegar. Those who are suffering with GERD, heartburn, acid reflux, if you put a tablespoon in a big glass of water and have that, that can help with acid reflux. It sounds counterintuitive, but people who have reflux or GERD often don't have enough stomach acid.
So
adding the apple cider vinegar may be helpful.
So you digest better.
It may be helpful. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're vying for a record in the length of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. But man, time flies when you're having fun. It didn't seem that long. So I hope our listeners don't mind. That's all the time we have for today's program. I just want to remind you that one way that you can help to underwrite these free podcasts, we hope you find them valuable, is to visit our dispensary at drhoffman.com. Look at all the great supplements that we have there. There you can find products like Ostanol that we talked about earlier, and great brands of curcumin, boswellan, fish oil, and all the products that we talk about here on Intelligent Medicine Podcast. And you can also avail your services of Leila Mutin. Now, for some of you, you may think, well, I'm not in New York. I can't come to the Hoffman Center. Well, think again, because Leila Mutin does phone consults, and all you need to do is establish contact, send her your records, and she, unlike me, will see you remotely. I got to see patients in person because I'm a doctor, and I got to do a physical exam and have initial contact with a patient, but Leila offers you an opportunity to garner the valuable advice that you hear each time you listen to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. So consider that as a way that you can partake of some of the insights that we bring you on this program. That's all the time we have for today's program. What say ye, Leila?
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
All right. And thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Leila Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.